your prime.
What about my prime, Nick?
Hello, Properly Howard fans. Howard is back. Well, no, that's a lie. We're not back. We're almost back with the next season of Properly Howard. Sometime in the next month, for sure. In the meantime, Steve and I both enjoyed the season finale of The Penguin quite a lot. We had different reactions to the season as a whole, but today you get to hear our off-season coverage of that finale. Major spoilers, so be careful moving forward. Make sure you check out everything that's happening at the Lorehounds. We'll Shift Dust will be covering Silo. I'm especially excited about their coverage of Dune Prophecy. So check out the Lorehounds for that coverage. Okay, here is stand-up comic Steve Osborne.
Do you regret forcing me to watch this show?
So the show that's doing very, very well from both critics and viewers, let me guess, The Contrarian is not a fan. Holy balls. Stop the press.
I don't feel like a contrarian.
But you, both of you for sure are. The fact that you're saying you aren't is kind of a contrarian stance.
I feel like I might be right and my opinion might be correct.
So the fact that you are universally thought of.
And it's possible that I'm the only one. It is possible that I'm the only one.
You're universally thought of as a contrarian, but somehow you say, no, you're not.
Actually.
Let me explain to you what a contrarian is.
Can we talk about the Latin contreras? now, I want you to know, I quite liked the finale. No, I think the finale was amazing. I really dug the finale. And I was watching it with my daughter, Nessa. She asked, like, should I, like, not watch this with you because maybe I should watch the entire show? And I was like, nah, you're going to catch on pretty quick. Just sit down and watch this with me. And she really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed it. And then she said, now I kind of wish I watched the whole show. And I said, you know what? I don't think you needed to. And so that was going to be my first question to you. After do you feel regret? My first question to you was, do you think this season finale could work by itself?
I would be saying, who are these people?
No, you wouldn't. You already know who the penguin is. You already know who the penguin is. You already kind of have a sense of the cityscape of Gotham. You know what's going on. It's not like the bat signal at the end would have confused you or anything like that.
Why would I have cared about Victor's death at all? Why would I have cared about the mother turning on him at all?
It's a good point.
I don't think you understand how series work.
I think
have you ever watched a series backwards? I don't think so.
Here's what I would suggest. If you are listening to this and you're listening to our little dispute and you're thinking, maybe I don't know if I want to watch this or not, but I am a Batman film fan. I would say, watch the first episode, watch the last episode. You're going to get it. You'll probably enjoy it. If you're not going to get it.
Two crime families were taken down. Right. In order for the lackey to rise to the top. There's no way watching the first episode and the last episode helps you understand that.
I think that was kind of inevitable. That someone's going to become a supervillain. So he's not going to be like some flunky forever. You know, he's on the come up. Surprising.
Here's the exception I'm going to take to you. So this is the thing: I feel like you're kind of out of pocket in this one here, if I may use the parlance of our times. So you come in and you say, "We all know who the Penguin is," and if I had asked you this before this series, who's the Penguin? You would have either given me some sort of a mishmash of Burgess Meredith's version of the Penguin, which you have already gone on record saying, "I didn't watch that show," but you feel like you have a sense of who that person is based solely on kind of a glimpses and clips and whatever. And then you also would combine that with Danny DeVito's Penguin. By the way, those two versions of the Penguin, pretty different. Burgess Meredith did not drool black goo. There was no eating of raw fish. He wasn't a deformed creature. So then you get to this one, and this one is neither of those two, other than the fact that they wobble and they're called the Penguin. So I do take exception with this notion of like, you know who the Penguin is. No, I don't. Not this one. Didn't know based on those other two. And I confess, not a comic reader, I can't really tell you much about his origin, how this one compares to some of the iterations. But I do know that this representation of the same way that the Riddler is no like the Riddler from the Batman. Is not at all like Jim Carrey's the Riddler, and not at all like Frank Gorshin's the Riddler, yet he's still the Riddler. So I don't think it's a fair statement to go like, oh, well, here we go again. The Joker, you might have some, discussion points about that. But again, I think we've seen a lot of different iterations of what the Joker is. So I do think that this Penguin requires a bit of, because what you saw in the Batman, he was like this club owner. He was kind of, he was a wobbly wannabe. And for him to turn into a supervillain, you do need those steps. And you do need to go through and see, well, what does he have to do to get there? And then the show did a lot of really good things to get you to sort of maybe find him sympathetic. And then they would show, no, this guy he's more than a rascal. He's awful.
All right. So I want to make two points.
Which I don't think we saw very well. I mean, you can't tell me Burgess Meredith's Penguin was the kind of, oh, I bet you he would choke out one of his closest allies. No, he would go rah, 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 with a monocle.
So I'd like to make 2 points. The first is that as the editor of this podcast, I want you to know that most of what you just said is not going to make it to the final cut. Right. So,
well, it would be important. It would be important.
Much like this show, you can take out a lot of that middle and get the gist of what you're talking about. Okay. The second thing I'd like to say,
as long as it proves your point, you do what you got to do.
The second thing I'd like to say is that I knew from the title sequence, I knew from the announcement of the show that by the end of the show, the guy's going to be a major player in Gotham City. He's going to be rise to power in such a way that he's going to be able to menace Batman eventually.
Okay. So what you're saying is no point in watching a movie called Batman because you're like, I think the show's already or the movie's already telling you there's going to be Batman.
What I'm saying is that I kind of knew what the Joker's deal was. I think it's fair to say that we all knew what the Joker or the Penguin's deal was.
If you can't even figure out which supervillain you watched, I don't feel that you're qualified to critique the show.
It's possible. It's possible. Let me say this. I loved this finale, and I think it could work as a standalone piece. And I almost think it's kind of necessary if of course, when the Joker winds up in the next Batman movie. I kind of feel like if you didn't see at least the season finale, you are not going to enjoy that nearly
as much. Wait, are you talking about the Penguin still? Or are you talking about the Joker now?
Let me try to say this again.
This isn't a pronoun thing. This is put some respect on the supervillain's name.
I do feel like if you walk into the next Batman movie and you had not seen at least the season finale of this show, you're not going to enjoy that movie as much. That is my sense. Mm. My sense is that the people who enjoyed this series are going to be in a better position to enjoy the next Matt Reeves Batman. Would you agree with that?
Well, right. I think we talked about that in the beginning, was that this gives you the ability to not have to do all of this character building in the next Batman. And I think at least I said that I'm hoping that that means that we'll get more Batman development, because most of the time the movies spend more effort trying to develop the villains. And in this case, you got to do all of that and then let the Batman film maybe, you know, hopefully just focus on Batman doing Batman things.
So this is something of a gamble, it feels like, for the sort of the DC reboot. Because this show has gotten a lot of accolades, like a lot of people are watching. But I would say that millions more are going to watch a Batman film that are going to watch this miniseries. So how much weight do you want to put on an HBO series like this? If the end goal is that you want people to enjoy your popcorn Batman movie. So it's worth it. You know, I probably wouldn't have watched this show unless you wanted me to. And I'm glad that I did, just for the finale. I think the whole thing was, the whole experience was worth the finale for me. And yet, a little bit of a gamble.
Well, gamble for what? I guess that's what I'm having a hard time with. Like, who stands to lose in this, in a gamble? A gamble suggests that there's a risk. And I mean, you're not risking... Uh-huh. The Batman movies are not
let me do an analogy here. Okay, so I enjoyed the first season of Daredevil. And did you ever watch Daredevil?
I watched quite a bit of it and then just kind of stopped.
Yeah, me too. So I watched the first season of Daredevil, and I watched enough of it so that when Daredevil shows up in the Spider-Man movies, I got a little thrill. Oh, hooray. They did a little stunt casting for me. That's a little bit of fan service that I really appreciated. All right. So that's fine. For my daughter, who hadn't watched Daredevil, she was watching Spider-Man. She heard the oohs and ahs in the movie theater. And then later on, she had to ask me, like, why, what was the thing about the blind lawyer? And I could tell her what it was. And that's fine. That's 2 minutes of that movie. But if this whole next movie is built on the padded fat shoulders of the Penguin, I wonder if you're taking too big of a gamble, that you're leaving too much of your audience behind for that film.
Well, my understanding is that the Penguin is slated to be maybe within 5 to 6 scenes in the second film.
All right, that's interesting. So let's guess 10 minutes of screen time or something.
Yeah, how much screen time did he have in the first one, right? So I think the key is you're building this is not just a Penguin building, but it's a Gotham building, right? It's building the world that Batman's going up against. So I think it is, on one hand, it would be if you don't have any access to the series and you don't do any research on it, and the Penguin from the first film is the last memory of him, and then you watch the second one and now he's this like major, you know, mob player, if not like the mob player, given the elimination of the rest of the other families, then it would be like, well, how do we get there, right? And would you rather, now again, you didn't really like the Batman, so kind of maybe I'm asking the wrong person, but assuming that you did like it enough to want to be interested in watching the second one, Would you rather they spend a good chunk of screen time building up the backstory of the Penguin at the expense of maybe whatever else is going on or Batman's development? Or would you rather sort of just have those blanks filled in another medium?
So I think you've convinced me on this. I think you're right that it probably helps not burdening the next movie with the Penguin's backstory. So you can spend more time on the Batman, or more likely spend more time on the Joker's rise to power or something.
Now, like my that. Understanding is the Joker's not going to be a major player until the last film in the trilogy.
Who's going to be the big baddie opposite of the Bat?
Well, now I guess we'll just have to wait and see. See, I think from a marketing standpoint, I think they're doing a really good job here. If you're not going to have the next Batman out until 2026, I mean, that's another full year going to go by. And, you know, might have been wise to have done this maybe next year, but I think it does help sort of bridge those gaps. And it's kind of a creative way to do it. I mean, we've talked about the Marvel world is, I think, a little unique in the sense that, like I've talked about, I didn't watch the Marvel series. And so I did go into some of these movies going, I don't know who this person is. And the movie assumes you already do, right? Now with this, you have the Penguin, one singular character, and you may, to your point, you may not necessarily have to make that huge leap, because it's not like he's got like superpowers now out of nowhere or something. He's risen to power, and you can maybe just sort of suspend that progression if you just watch the second movie. My guess is that most people that go to watch this movie are going to have some access to this series. And I think the other, maybe not so much a gamble, but it may be a bit of a gamble, but it's a little bit of a test, is to find out how dark can we go with a Batman movie. Deadpool and Wolverine and all the Deadpool movies have shown us that there is an audience. You can still make a rated R blockbuster superhero movie, but it takes a lot of guts to do it with like a really popular mainstream character. Now, this is a very rated R series. It's very violent. The language is such that it's very coarse. So it's an interesting thing. And this is what, like the number three, I think, all-time HBO show in terms of viewership or something?
So let me say something about this. I feel like this show is as dark as anything I've ever watched. And I'm talking like True Detective. I'm talking like, you know, House of the Dragon, whatever. This is a dark, dark show, and I'm up for it. You know, I like these kinds of shows. I did not expect the show to be as dark.
No, not me neither. I was every episode, I was still kind of like, this is a Batman joint.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, let me ask you this, all right? My little statement that you could just watch the season finale and basically get the idea and then move into the next film. I think what you would be missing if you did that is you'd be missing the Sovia Gigante story.
Right.
You would not understand like why it is so utterly hopeless to see her back in Arkham at the end. And I feel like this story is as much about her becoming a supervillain as it is about the Penguin becoming a supervillain.
Yeah.
There's no scene in this show that is more supervillainy than her hypnotizing his mother into a situation where, instead of just killing them, gets the mother and son to turn on each other to the point where... The mother calls him the devil and shanks him in the gut. Like, to me, that's some super villain nonsense right there. And I almost feel like if they don't use her in the movie, I'll be disappointed.
Right. And I think that that's key. I don't, because I especially with the letter from Selina Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Which was interesting to me, because I was not expecting the return of Catwoman. And I'm wondering if the fact that she gets that note means that I should expect her return in the next film, or if that's their way of saying, okay, we could do a spinoff with those two in another HBO series, and we should not expect the return of Selina in the next film.
And wouldn't that be an interesting move, is to see if, like, an actual Batman series, and then you have Batman movies that are separate, and like, and Batman never shows up or it could have been a chance to, like, I mean, ultimately by showing the bat signal and making a reference to Selina Kyle, it is kind of a way to just maybe remind folks what's going on here, because it's kind of easy to you know, for me, because I really did enjoy the series, to kind of go every once in a while and go like, so Batman's just like, is he like on an ayahuasca journey right now? Like, what's going on? The whole city just blew up.
Right. I think it's interesting. It's like, you're almost focusing on Crown Point, right?
Right.
Which is supposed to, it's kind of in the show, you're supposed to think like, it's kind of a forgotten part of the city. And Gotham is so big that the Batman could be having other adventures in other parts of the city and have no idea what's going on in Crown Point. So I did like that idea. And I wanted to ask you about the bat signal at the end. Do you feel like the show needed it?
Yes and no. It did feel, at one moment it feels like fan service, but on the other hand, I also was like, okay, well, good. Batman.
I was thrilled. I was thrilled by it. And it could just be like, I was waiting for a cape the whole time and I didn't get it. But then I kind of got distracted, kind of got interested, you know, and this season finale was, like we said, extremely dark. And I almost forgot that Batman was even part of this story.
Well, and I think it does something too that gave me a level of excitement too, in the sense like, there's the bat signal, hell yeah. But then there's another element of that that's like, after watching something so dark and kind of depraved, like as most series do, like a more modern series tend to do, especially in HBO. And this may sound like a little bit of a fanboy kind of geeky thing. It's like, but there is a hero, and that's. That's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, right? Is that like the bat signal in that case isn't just a signal, but it is a beacon of light in a very dark situation. And so while Batman, this world is a very dark and gritty world that they've created, there's still a guy dressed as a bat who's going to help. And I kind of like that. I found it an effective way to end. It gives you sort of a cliffhanger to a certain degree, like, okay, well, how is all this going to shape out? Does make me ready for another Batman film, but it does make me wonder how, I mean, actually the Batman's pretty gritty. I mean, the Riddler was pretty brutal.
It's pretty gritty, but it was a serial killer movie, right? So you're expecting that, right? You're not, here's what made this show so dark, and what I think kind of makes it brilliant is that it's a crime drama, and you would expect, you know, some pretty dark moments in a crime drama, right? But at the end of the day, if the dirty cops get what's coming to them, you're okay, because that's the rules of the street. Or if a criminal gets what's coming to him, you're kind of okay with that too, because this guy chose to live outside the law or something like that. But the internal morality of most crime dramas is that you're loyal. And most mafia shows are like, you're loyal to your family above all, whether or not it's the law or it's your country or it's society at large. All of those things, those things get demoted ethically if you can demonstrate this tribal collectivism and you're loyal to your family. And what this show does is it says, even that, even those, that the internal logic of the mafioso is too much to expect from the Penguin. The Penguin turns all of that on its head. In fact, the moment anyone calls him family is the moment that person just wrote their death warrant.
Right.
Right. I don't know what he thinks he's doing for his mom, you know, sort of just staring out onto the, onto the city lights.
He
basically got his mom in an attic like Psycho.
How did you read that?
Oh, that was like a Psycho thing for me.
See, I didn't know there was a part of me, but yeah, for sure was that. And there was also, it felt like a moment of like, he was holding her hostage.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit.
It's just an absolute, like, it's bleak. He's dancing with.
He's got his mother in the attic. I think that tear at the end is meant to tell us that she's awake inside there somewhere. Right. So now she's a prisoner. And then he's dressed up a sex worker as his mother to dance with her and tell him that he's a good boy and that he's the best. And holy moly. When he kills Vic, which I did not see coming at all. I mean, it was as jarring as anything I've seen. When he kills Vic, I was like, what am I watching? This is the saddest and darkest thing I've seen on television all year.
The show, so I'm going to go back to, you'll probably, whatever it is that you kept of my earlier diatribe about what the Penguin is and what we think he is.
It's all gone. It's completely deleted.
I thought that one of the more impressive things that this show did for somebody who's maybe a bit of a lay Batman, like more specifically to movies, as opposed to comic book type consumer, it made the Penguin one of the most vile, if not the most vile Batman villains I've ever seen. And I don't to me was a major trick, because the Penguin always kind of felt a little silly.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, that's exactly. Sort of the thing is that it's like, what is his role exactly? How does he fit in? How is he a formidable opponent for Batman? What is he exactly? That became the question. And then now it's like, it's he's more sinister than any version of the Joker I've seen.
Yeah, he's as evil as evil gets. And you almost see him, like, even the last little stitch of weakness, which he associates having family with having a weakness, it's gone. He's completely eliminated that from his supervillain profile. And so you get the idea that this guy is ready to take over. And I will say that I've never seen a courtroom used in the way that the courtroom was used in this finale. When he's in there, he's sitting on the bench there, using the gavel. It really gives you the sense. It's a nice little motif for the city of Gotham. Gotham is famously a city where the criminals are basically running the whole city. And so for him to walk into the courtroom, sit behind the bench, wield the gavel, had that conversation with the politician, very effective and very, very original. How many movies and shows have I seen where the courtroom was used for dramatic effect? Never seen it used like this.
Right. No, it was a very effective. And I think there's something not fanciful about it, but did you ever feel comic booky in this?
Yeah. The whole time there was a guy in a suit the whole time. And as much as they tried to get rid of the spandex, I never took my eyes off the suit. Hmm. And there was a moment where I was like, I stopped looking at the eyes and I started looking at the shoulders. the shoulder pads for me were basically Batman's cowl.
It's so interesting that you have such a problem with practical effects.
I don't have a problem with practical effects. I have a problem with this particular kind of thing. And I've always had a problem with these things in movies. I've always had a trouble with, when they try to age up or age down characters in films. It always takes me out. And there's very few films where it didn't take me out.
And again, I'm going to go back to what we said in the first one. This is for sure a you problem. Keep watching House of the Dragon knowing what their hair color really is.
Sure. And I think Sarah had the same issue. I think when she watched the first episode of Game of Thrones, or she was walking through the room, she was like, why does that girl have blonde hair and brown eyebrows? It's like, all right, I guess you're out.
Right.
I guess that's it for you. You're not going to be interested in everything else that's going to happen in this show.
Well, that's the thing, right? So it's, if you can't get past that, I think it's very hard to discuss the effectiveness of much anything else in this show, right? I mean, if you can't see the main character as a legitimate entity.
Did the shoulders not bug you? No. Come on, be honest. The suspenders with the shoulder, clear shoulder pads, it didn't take you out at all.
Batman Returns is my favorite Batman movie. I know that Danny DeVito isn't shaped like that. I know he has regular
tonally
hands.
That was a very different movie. We've talked
about it. So do you not think that people are shaped like Colin Farrell's character in real life? Have you not been? You live in Ohio.
I feel like if I was that shape, I would not be wearing shoulder pads under my suspenders. When I wear suspenders, it is to accent the anatomically correct shape of my shoulders. It never worked for me. At the end of the day, I enjoyed this finale quite a lot, but I wish it was a different actor.
Yeah, I think Colin Farrell is maybe my favorite part of it. So this is where we'll have to disagree. I think he's great. I suspended all, you know, I mean, there were moments where you did have those like, man, that is Colin Farrell, but not because I saw Colin Farrell, but because I reminded myself. So I was fully in on the character. I was fully in on how he was presented. I almost feel like I like it better because it is that way in a weird way. The same way that they didn't hire a professional clown to be the Joker ever. They put people in makeup for that. I appreciated that. Every Joker movie I've seen has required makeup, and I was okay with that. I don't know if you know that Aaron Eckhart had a full face in The Dark Knight. They did some things with it. They didn't hire a guy who had a half a face.
Oh, that's a travesty.
There's all these half-faced coming actors that are not getting the representation they deserve. You're
damn right about that.
All these half-faced kids have no one to look up to. It's like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia to the half-faced kids.
One more thing about this finale that I quite enjoyed. I think I've seen maybe half a dozen times someone tied up in a room while a villain monologues. And it's always, you know, always kind of like, this is just kind of pretty superhero tropey. When Sophia has Oz and forget the mother's name in the room, and she's doing like, she's basically turning them against each other. I was fully invested. I should have been taken out of it when he bust the chair loose. Did that to me? It totally worked. The way that they staged the, you know, him escaping with the mother over the shoulder, I was totally invested. They run outside. There's a guard outside. He's taking drops. He gets shot through the eye. That whole scene was perfect. It was perfect. And it shouldn't have worked. At any point in that scene, I should have thought like, oh, come on, give me a break. And I never got taken out of it. Loved that scene. And I feel like I've seen that scene, exact scene, half a dozen times. And this was the first time I've seen it actually work.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't really even until like later thinking about it, realize that that was a monologuing scene that would, should have, maybe had that moment where you're like, oh, here we go. Tell us all how we're doing.
He's surrounded by gunned, you know, people strapped. He's duct taped to a chair. There's no way he's going to escape from that. It's just impossible. And for some reason they pulled it
off. Well, and it's another way of making the Penguin formidable, not just in like how sinister he is, but there is some, he's adept at certain things. Right. And like, so it does add an element of like, okay, this villain is something to consider. And in a way it's like, kind of like, that's the whole movie or the whole series is doing that. Like don't underestimate. It almost does. mm-hmm. almost does for the world what it's doing for the viewer is like you think right. you think the penguin, you think you know what the penguin is and why this is why the penguin actually matters. I do like a lot of the like the top hat, the multiple umbrella references.
Yeah, he never puts the top hat on, does he? But it's just a wink, right?
And then the other thing I really enjoy, like going back to you talk about hypnosis, and that was always what he would do, right? In the series, is he would spin his umbrella to hypnotize people. That was his like that was his shtick. And yet hypnosis was being right. used against him in a way, right?
I didn't know that was a nod to that, but I get that for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so there. Yeah, I think so. And they even did that in Batman Returns, where he's got all these umbrellas and he spins one around, and the guy and Walken's like, "What's that supposed to do? Hypnotize me?" And he's like, "No, it just gives you a real big headache, and then it shoots it." Okay, just a second.
I think Steve's being eaten alive.
Yeah, that's what's happening. All right.
I want you to know I'm leaving all of that in. one more thing about this show, and then we can wrap it up. Now, I thought it was really, really funny when he's about to go in the courtroom, he gets out of the car, he like fixes his hair, and he looks back in the... he asks Vic, like, "How do I look?" There's a little pause by Victor with this look on his face, like, "Dude, you look like the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life." I thought that was really, really funny. How do I look? Good for you, I guess.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's pretty great.
He's a very handsome guy in real life. I don't know if you know that.
I don't want that. I want ugly guys.
He's got a very watchable quality when he's not wearing shoulder pads.
I want ugly guys to play handsome guys. Like Adam Driver.
Is Adam Driver not... Is he not handsome? I feel like he's very handsome.
I think I asked this question. I forget which. It may have been like the whatever. We asked it during one, and I said, "Is Adam Driver the handsomest ugly man or the ugliest handsome man?"
Have you used that on stage?
No.
I think it'd be really worth using. It's really fun. And I almost, let me throw my answer. I don't think he's handsome. I think he's sexy. And I think that there's a difference. Mm. And I think that for some reason, and maybe we could call it the Nolte. He's got a Nolte quality, or a Jack, almost even a Jack Palance quality. Okay. There's a certain amount of sexy that an ugly man can have that almost supersedes anything he lacks in terms of being a handsome man.
Okay. Yeah, I think my wife would agree he's sexy. I'm wondering she might think he's handsome, but I don't know.
Like, let me just give you an example here. So, like, Mike Myers. Mm-hmm. Mike Myers famously played Link Thompson, handsome man. That's true. On SNL, right? But if you see him in real life, you wouldn't think like, "Oh, well, that guy's the most handsome man I've ever seen." What ended up happening with him is he put on an ugly suit called Austin Powers. And as soon as he became uglier, he became sexier. I don't know how it's like movie making magic. So I'm not sure. I don't know where else I can give you that kind of wisdom, because my seminar certainly doesn't want to pay me to say things like that in classroom.
It's a shame.
That's why we have this podcast.
That's right.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.